I care deeply about the subject matter. It has become my life's work. Because a legacy is not about when you die. That's too late. It is a living legacy. It's not too late. You wake up in the morning, you have an opportunity to make change, to make it a better world.
I'm your host, Rom Cook, and this is Contenders Wanted. Hello and welcome to the Contenders Wanted podcast, the podcast for those striving to get better every day and unleash their potential. If you're new to the show or haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast player and leave us a quick review. This helps other contenders find the show and lets us know how we can improve. When was the last time you felt something so strongly that it informed your decisions around every aspect of your life? Well, our guest today is Natalie Money Mama Gold, and on the show today, Natalie shares with us some intense life experiences that she went through that have informed her life's mission and living legacy. Natalie Alicia Goldberg Esquire is a celebrity wealth attorney, business strategist, and managing attorney of Goldberg LLP. As an award-winning attorney, rising star super lawyer, two-time best-selling author, and a nationwide speaker about women and money, Natalie prides herself on being a fearless cheerleader of her client's success. Natalie's vision of life and legacy planning colors everything she does. The mission for her companies is to spread love. She believes love means lift and uplift others to live vivacious, victorious, and extraordinary lives. Natalie is an influential industry leader thriving on and off the camera. She has appeared on television networks and shows including CNBC, Fox News, CBS, HLN, BBC, and Good Morning America, as well as being featured in articles in CNN World, Parents Magazine, The New York Post, Star Magazine, and Cosmopolitan, just to name a few. With years of experience and unmatched credentials, Natalie is uniquely equipped to make a significant and lasting impact on her clients' lives. She has saved families millions of dollars from unscrupulous litigants, estate disputes, long-term care costs, and taxes. Natalie believes in love as her guiding value and ensures that each and every client feels seen, loved, and respected. I had a great time recording this episode with Natalie, but honestly, the thing that I think will stick out the most is just her intensity and her purposefulness for which she does everything. And that's one of the main reasons why I had wanted to get her on the show. I think that this purposefulness and this intensity with which Natalie lives her life and with everything that she does is a hallmark of all great contenders out there. And so I hope that you feel that on the show today, and I hope that you really enjoy this episode, because I definitely did. So with that, let's jump in.
Natalie Gold, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rob. Great to be here with you.
Well, I am super excited to have you on the show. We got connected on LinkedIn, and I've just really enjoyed seeing your content and kind of some of the side conversations that we've been having on LinkedIn. And so I'm really pumped to have you here on the show. But perhaps take a minute and introduce yourself. Tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Great. So hi, everyone. Thanks so much, Rob, for having me. My name is Natalie Alicia Gold. I am a wealth attorney. What does that mean? I help people protect their life and legacy. So a lot of other people will call it estate planning. That's death and dying, boring and scary, which is why 64% of the American population die without a will. And it's simply unacceptable, because as a mother myself, I know that there's nothing more important to me than ensuring the well-being of my girls, should heaven forbid something happen. So it's not about wishing badly upon anyone. It's simply about taking control of the life we have built to be the ones to define our legacy. And with that, I've written some wonderful books that have become bestsellers. I am a commentator on many of the networks, from Fox to CNN. I like to say I'm an equal opportunity offender. And I'm a mom of two delicious daughters, a wife to a brilliant business entrepreneur. And I'm trying to make this world a better place every single day.
Well, I think you're doing a great job at it. Like I said, I've really enjoyed the content that you've put out. And I was going to say, if you didn't start to mention some of these other things, including your books, your podcast, your business, all sorts of things, you do so many things, which is part of the reason why I wanted to get you on here, just because you have such an interesting story and do so much stuff. I think there's a lot of great lessons for a lot of people here. So with that, I'd like to kind of start with something that I learned about you recently. Now, you said that you are a, quote, fun fact machine.
Yeah.
Now, between the two of us, my nickname in my family is Mr. Did You Know? Because I always say, hey, did you know? And then fill it in with something else. So I'd love to get a second. How did you get this nickname? And what are some of these fun facts that you've maybe shared recently?
When I was pledging a sorority back in my teenhood at Binghamton University, mm-hmm. we had to learn fun facts about the sisters. And I guess I just have a mind that soaks up information and can
regurgitate the random information, right?
Yeah. So it's, and these women would tell us, like, you know, I remember clearly one woman was like, at the time we're 18, 19, 20 years old thinking we know everything. And
of course.
She was like, I think about the men I date as different shoes. Is he a stiletto? Really good looking, but very uncomfortable. Is it a sneaker? You know? But the fact is, Rob, that I would listen to these girls' stories and be able to regurgitate it when asked. And my other pledge, literally, they would call us the Delta Natalie pledge class. And they would say to us, you press a button on Natalie Alicia, my maiden name, and a fun fact comes out. Because it was just about listening to people's stories and mm-hmm. making them feel good that you remembered something about them in your sleep deprived, crazy pledging experience. And to me, joining something like that as a teenager is one of the best, whether it's a sports team or something you're passionate about. That to me is really the value of a college education. It's the extracurricular, because look, we could learn the information online today for free.
A lot of it we could, you're right.
And many of the professors are not like actual practitioners. They are professors, so they don't have a network that they're going to tap us into. So really what we're going there is to network with the people in our class who could open doors, and we could open doors for them down the road. What better way than to understand what makes a person really special and say it back to them? That's a way to be loved.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, all of us, we were talking about this off air before, but all of us love either talking about ourselves or hearing things about ourselves that other people remember.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's just, like, oh, stop, keep going.
Exactly. Oh, please, don't. You know, everyone wants you to actually keep going,
right?
When I say that. Yeah, exactly.
But the fact is, Rob, look, you know, there's nothing that a person likes to hear better than their name. That is their way of showing up in the world. That is what, from childhood, we're called and how, you know, we are given significance.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can match up a name with who that person is and connect based on that, I think that is a superpower I have. Because, Rob, it's not about knowing everything. No one can. It's about knowing who to bring in and why. And those connectors, call them connectors, makers, they're the ones who make the world go round.
No, I love that point, actually. It's not what you know. It's just a tweak on the version of not what you know, but who you know, right? But it's not necessarily just knowing them, but knowing how to connect others for their mutual benefit.
Absolutely.
I think that's a great point. Fantastic point.
I recently reread Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point.
Oh, great book. I love that one.
Everything he does, he's just, you know, fire. Amazing.
Yeah, he's a stud.
And the fact is that you need the people who truly know about it, the salespeople who can sell it, but the connectors who are going to connect it all together.
Because you can have all those other pieces, but if you don't have the connectors, it's not going to go anywhere. You're not going to reach that tipping point.
Think about it. You're a CPA and I'm an attorney. Think about the best practitioner is probably not the rainmaker.
Oh, it's true.
It doesn't matter.
99% of the time, he is not.
Skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're knee deep in tax law all the time, they're not going to be whining and dining.
Nope. You just don't have the time.
Vice versa, right? So What I think industry really needs to get towards is understanding to put people in the position of strength, of their strengths, and being able to say, like, okay, this woman is an amazing connector, an amazing rainmaker. She doesn't want to be doing the day-to-day practice. Or this day is fabulous at connecting. He was on his alumni organization. He's involved. He's on this nonprofit. How do we really maximize the benefit to the company, but also the benefit to the person?
Yeah.
Because if you get to do what you love all day, you're going to kill it.
Yeah. And you're going to do a really good job at it, too. Right?
No doubt.
Yeah. I think that's a great lesson for business owners in general, right? This idea of find your team where they fit best and where their strengths are. But also on an individual basis, right? You should be examining yourself and say, okay, what do I enjoy the most? Where do I have natural inclinations or natural skills? And how can I maximize my time and my output in those areas to produce the most value, right? I mean, I think that's a great thing for all of us to be considering all the time.
Rob, I think that is our work in this on this planet. It's understand thyself, know thyself, right? And then from there,
to thine own self be true. Right, as Shakespeare said.
Figure it out. Figure out how you can make that your work. Because, look, you know, I have piles of paper on my desk. I hate the paper. I hate the printing. I hate the scanning.
But that should be heresy as an attorney, right?
Right. But what? Well, you know. But the fact is, at a big firm, you have a paralegal. You have legal assistants. They're the ones doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So I realized, how do I create a firm that I love, which is my client interaction? And my being able to connect people and help other people build their business as well. So I then hire for my weaknesses. So I'm like, okay, you're going to be doing that, you know. And so we're able to operate like a big firm virtually in this new, which I think from one perspective, the pandemic has opened up such an opportunity for people to rethink and reimagine how it could be.
Totally agree with that. 100%.
So it's very exciting.
Yeah. All right. Well, that went a completely different direction than I was anticipating, but I think that was
Rob,
that was
you're
great.
Giving me rope here. That's the thing. You know?
Hey, you know, you got to have some rope. I don't want to let these conversations flow, because if it doesn't flow, I mean, what's the point? You got to have a good conversation still. All right. So then let's circle back. If we're going to rein it in here a little bit. I'd love to talk a little bit about your early life, because I feel like every person has a story, right? And that story tells you so much about them and about what makes them tick today. And I've heard you reference a couple of different times in things that I've read and seen about you that you had a kind of a life-altering accident at the age of about 15 that's really impacted you. Would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So at 15 years old, I woke up a regular kid August 20th, 2004. I came from a very working class, middle class family, divine, amazing people, just an immigrant family, you know. So I always understood the value of hard work. I saw my parents work hard, and I knew that I didn't want to be a burden on them ever.
Yeah.
So at 14 and 15, I was already working, you know, and who, like, what jobs at that time are you going to get as a 14 and 15 year old? Today, I would say you should be doing digital and social media for every business owner you know and have a bigger business than them. However, at that time, right? 15 years ago, that wasn't the case. It was like,
that wasn't a thing at that point.
I'm going to go work at an ISIS shop. And that's what I did for $6 an hour, which I was then making at that time.
Yep.
Thank God that my hourly rate has gone up a few extra.
Just a little bit, hopefully, from there.
So, you know, it was a Friday and I had just gotten $120 in cash. You know,
you're a high roller then.
Tax, you know, podcast.
But, yep.
And I walked home with the money in my little purse, and I had long, curly, blonde hair, my Natalie nameplate on, and my little purse that, you know, had $120 that I had just gotten paid for 2 weeks of hard work.
Yeah.
And I didn't make it across the street, Rob. A block away from home in Queens, New York, two guys decided that they were going to see who's more of a man by racing from light to light. At which point, one of them hit me with their car at 60 miles an hour without even pressing a brake, as it was later found. So I like to think of myself as a walking miracle. And truthfully, the entire left side of my body to this day has multiple pieces of metal in it. No one would ever know. I mean, back in the times when we were able to congregate and dance, I was the queen bee in the dance. But, you know, however, the truth is that there's a metal on the left-hand side of me. And to me, it's so fun because it's like looking back, right? The Steve Jobs quote that the lines, you have to know that it's all going to connect when you look back. And sometimes in the midst of it, you can't appreciate that. But the fact is, Rob, when you're given a gift like I was, to see the value of your life at 15 years old and have, God willing, a very long road ahead to be able to say, I'm going to make it better. I was given this opportunity, as we all are. All of us who are living and breathing on this earth have this opportunity every single day to go and do something amazing with our lives. But I call many people the walking dead. They are checking in and checking out of life like it's a rehearsal. There are no dress rehearsals. This is it. So I truly believe that it was a gift to have my eyes open to it. And at that moment, I was determined that I was going to be a lawyer because there was going to be no injustice brought upon people the way that it was for me. Because although the guy was drag racing, his statement was able to be reneged. He had a $25,000 insurance policy. He lived with mom and dad, had no assets of his own. So what we call my case is a sad story.
Oh, no.
You know what? But thank goodness the resolve I got from that is worth way more than what the insurance policy ever would have been. And that moment, I really became the lawyer that I am now. So, you know, I did law. I finished high school. I refused to miss one day of school. It was August 20th, 2004. So remember, school started in about 2 weeks. And I went on the first day after being in the intensive care. I said, I am not missing one day
really?
Of grade. And I went in a wheelchair. I refused to miss one day of school because I went to Townsend Harris High School, which for any New Yorkers who are listening to this, it is typically ranked the top. We're between New York, between Townsend and Stuyvesant. There's always top one or two schools in New York. And traditionally, it's the top 20 or 30 around the country. So when I'm telling you that everyone in that school was a former valedictorian, it's not an exaggeration. And I was not going to be left behind because of this accident, let it define me. So I went in on the first day of school in that wheelchair. And at 15 years old, that is quite a courageous act.
Yeah, that is. That's exactly what I was thinking.
You know, I just, the chair was not going to bind me and was not going to define me. And the doctor said, we'll talk about you. We don't know how you survive. We'll talk about you walking in a year. Within a month and a half, I was dancing and choreographing on stage.
Really?
Yeah. So anyone who is betting against me, just tell me I can't do it and we'll see.
Well, you know, I really appreciate you sharing that story. I think there's two great truths in there. The first one was this idea of perspective, right? This idea of understanding the value of your life, and you got a view of the value of life at 15 years old. Yeah. I think very few of us, like to your point, you know, we're the walking dead, effectively walking around. Very few of us get that perspective. But for those that do, it changes your life, right? My dad has a saying, he would tell me this all the time as a kid. He'd always tell me, Rob, it's all about perspective. Rob, it's all about perspective. And truthfully, as a kid, I hated it. I hated hearing that. But the older I've gotten, the more I realize he's right. And I think your story just is one more piece of evidence for that, right? When you see the value of your life and you see the blessing that is before you, suddenly things that were monumental, that were terrible, quote unquote, kind of seem to fade in comparison. So thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's a great thing for all of us to seek for and maintain and remember. So thank you for that. The second part is this resolve. I love this idea. This is tenacity that came out of that. Were you like that before the accident, or is this just...
I mean, I was always a high
school. Or is it just amplified maybe?
Right. I mean, like I was in that high school before. I mean, I live to perform and do well at the stuff I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will literally, and it's funny, I was talking today to someone and they're like, are you a people pleaser? I'm like, hell yes, girlfriend. Like, you heard about people shit. Like, I will go to heaven and earth. Just tell me, Natalie, you did such a great job. And but the fact is, I'm trying to get over that, right? We all need to get over and grow. But, you know, the opposite side of that is that I know I can do it.
Yeah.
I know I can do anything that I want to do. And we all have that power. Like, the fact is, from a spiritual perspective, Rob, why is it that every book anyone would read ever, from Buddhism to Kabbalah to this, to they all say the same thing? Because to me, that's
truth is truth.
And the truth is that if you want something, it belongs to you. You just got to go get it. And people are scared. You know, like, I have this amazing quote, and I'll use my coffee cup with my kid on it. As a, she's pondering, as a prop, there is a fact that if you catch a firefly in a container and you put a lid on it, the firefly will hit that lid one and exactly one time. Thereafter, they might fly right under it. They're never going to hit the lid again. If you take off the lid, Rob, the firefly will never fly out. And isn't that really how we live our lives?
Yeah, I would totally agree.
There's another saying I love, which really hits home. It's winter outside and there are birds flying around. People are saying, Birdie, you can fly anywhere. Why are you still here? Are we scared to move into the next stage of you? Undoubtedly, the answer is yes, because you know what? People have their comfort, and it's the devil they know here in a world that may not be working great for them, but what could be on the other side? I don't live by any of those constraints. Clearly, it's a pandemic time. It's a different time where you just can't get on a plane and go.
Of course.
But you know what?
But I think it's the mentality that's the key there, right?
Go.
Is this idea of, do you accept just life as it is, or do you attempt to mold it, create it, to push above that ceiling that you currently feel that you're at? Do you try and, or do you just accept it as it is, take it as it comes?
Are you a victim or are you a co-creator?
That is exactly where I was going to go next. Yes, it's this whole... life happens to me, or I make life happen. You know, the victim or the creator. I love that.
And Rob, you know, look, it's people who are jealous, people who hate on others. Wake the hell up. The time that you're saying bad things about someone, you're actually encouraging good things to happen to them. If you just spent that same time going out and saying, how do I make myself happy? You would be unbelievably successful.
That's true. There is a lot of wasted energy on, you call them unproductive tasks. You could call them whatever you want, but it's so true.
Buffering, so true. Too. I learned this recently. What are we not willing to feel? And that is why we're tolerating a life that's less than our expectations.
Oh, interesting. What do you mean? Maybe dive a little deeper.
So for instance... for me, it's boredom. If I feel boredom, I'm like up a wall. I can't feel boredom. So I will go.
I think all of us in some way in the technological day and age, if we're willing to admit it to ourselves, feel the same way. So I think your phone every 5 seconds, right?
So what do we do to fill that void? Instead of really feeling the boredom and seeing what comes, we get another cup of coffee. We drink alcohol. Some people take drugs. Some people go and eat more food. Some people scroll on their
play video games. So, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So that's all, like, if you really think about it, we're not even thinking about doing that stuff. We are in zombieland.com when we're doing that stuff, but it's to fill the void so that we don't have to reflect on what's actually happening in our lives.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. I've actually had moments where I watched the recent documentary series, I guess, on Netflix, you know, the, what's it called? The social,
I know what you're talking about the social dilemma.
Yeah, the social dilemma. Thank you. On the impact of technology on our lives. And after watching that, I found myself just picking up my phone when I was bored to check my email or to check LinkedIn or whatever it was. And immediately I was like, I was appalled at myself. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm totally being sucked into it. This is exactly what we're talking about. And I have since then deleted things off of my phone and I've kind of shut things off so that when that comes, like you said, just revel, sit with the boredom, sit with whatever that uncomfortable feeling is for a moment and see what comes. You never know, right? It could be moments of creativity and creation and ideas for something that you've been trying to figure out for a long time. Who knows? But if you don't create space for that, it'll never be able to come.
You have to be willing to receive.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. I love this. Okay. Well, let's move a little bit farther forward in your story then. So you get hit by this car, complete injustice, kind of sets you on fire for becoming a lawyer, kind of gives you that additional boost in terms of tenacity and perseverance. And you go hard and fast, obviously, in a lot of areas in life. And you became a lawyer at age 23 and then started your own firm at age 24. obviously, it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong here, but this initial story kind of impacted that drive. Was there anything else that, really sustained you? Because, I mean, how did you do that, I guess, is the question. That seems crazy for some people, I'm sure.
A few things, Rob. You have to have such resolve and you have to know who you are, have such confidence. And, like, I saw my first boss and I'm like, I can do what she does. What's stopping me?
Why not? You know, right?
Who's going to stop me besides me?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, if I'm smart enough to become a lawyer at 23 years old, debt free from an immigrant family, it's not like I had the silver spoon. It's not like someone is saying, get my daughter in. I'm smart enough to figure this out. Mm-hmm. You don't need to know everything. Who does? You build a network. You have to understand, again, who are you connected to that you can lean on and help, and they help you to figure it out. And here's the secret, Rob. A lot of older, experienced professionals will love a younger person who can bring in business and hit the ground running and be at events because, you know what? They have the experience and they could be the best practitioner. But it doesn't mean anything if they don't have the clients to service.
Yep.
There's a lot of broke-ass people out there who have 30 years of experience. And another thing I learned was a lot of people who like to rely on their experience typically have 30 years of the same bad experience. And they've never learned more.
That's a good point.
They just rest on their laurels. Like, I've been in practice 30 years. Remember, 30 years ago to practice law was a very different thing. No one questioned the lawyer. There was no Google.
Mm-hmm.
You were the man.
Yep.
Today, we are practicing in a very different kind. I mean, look, realistically, AI is going to take many CPA and law jobs and many other jobs around the whole world.
Yep.
What can AI not do? It's not the simple form or the simple tax return or whatever. It's the human to human connection, knowing what you don't know and how to go find it. That's it.
Yeah. I think that's a great point right there. So many good things. Okay. So I want to circle back to it. One point that you made in the middle of that, as you said, you got to lean on this network, right? You got to connect with them. So perhaps, how did your network impact your ability to have the confidence to go start your own firm?
So I started networking because I started my own firm.
Okay.
And what I found, because remember, I was 24 years old. However, I had worked before my first job out of law school. Well, I was in law school interning. Then I got a position there, was in-house for a real estate development company.
Okay.
And I just realized, like, I'm really good at getting shit done. I'm very smart. I get it done quickly, efficiently, and I'm great at connecting with people, which I always knew going through school, right? Like being, you know, the president of every organization I was part of or very involved, always taking leadership opportunities, going for it in the biggest sense of the way of the word. So I'm like, I'm just going to do, and to me, this is fun. You know, it's like, and then you have to temper that. Because when you're a young kid thinking you have to impress everybody, you're the one who's like, let me show you that I'm doing well. So let me pick up the bill for this and for that. And all of a sudden you look at your credit card and you're like, how the hell did I spend 10 grand on coffee? So, you know, the message there is you are impressive if you're taking that leap and presenting who you are to the other person. You don't have to show off like, let me buy this for you to feel that. In fact, if that's all that a person wants you to do, take them out to lunch and you're the 20-something year old and they're the 50-something year old, wake up. There's something wrong with that person.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And I was taken advantage of by a lot of these people, Rob, because young, blonde, this and that, you know, a lot of the men too were very happy to hang out with me, this and that. And, oh, Blondie, send me business. Where was Blondie's cut of that deal?
Yeah.
So you have, you know, you need to really, I think, especially as a woman, understand the strength you really do bring. And how you being different than everyone else in this in the meeting is a good thing. And how every single big organization on planet Earth is thinking about how do we get some of the women's dollars? Because they're the ones who all the wealth is transitioning to right now. Because 9 out of 10 women survive their spouse. There are more women born than men. Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So being the woman is the power. I think.
No, I definitely agree with that. And I mean, frankly, have you ever seen the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Of course. Tula.
Okay.
The Tula. Man is the head of the house and the woman is the neck.
She can turn the man any way she wants. That's exactly right. It's true. And that's why everyone laughs during that portion because women are very, very powerful.
Absolutely.
I think this is a great transition then to something that we actually talked about slightly at the very beginning before we even started recording is this idea of where you got your name from, Money Mama. And this Natalie Money Mama Gold is your name on LinkedIn, which I love, by the way. I would love for you to kind of tell the listeners, how did you get this name? And what does this name mean to you?
We are told, Money Mama was the name of my second book, okay? How did I get to that? We are told as women, be empowered, get the degree, go to the best school, doesn't matter, take on the debt. Who the hell is giving us that advice? Because you are an empowered woman until you become a mom. And then, as Arianna Huffington has said, they take the baby out and they put the guilt in. Oh, you're working? Doesn't your husband make enough? Oh, you're staying home? But what did you get all that education for? You cannot win. And
the mom shaming is relentless.
Relentless. Oh, you're not breastfeeding? No, I don't have milk in my breast because I was inundated for 3 days, induced, and I still couldn't give birth that way, and they gave me a C-section. Thank you for asking. This is the insanity that a woman has to go through about every decision. And then it's like, you get what I call the suggestion box. Oh, did you think about, oh, did you ask your sister-in-law? Oh, you know what? I became a lawyer 23 years old, debt-free. I can figure some shit out for myself. Thank you very much. And the fact was that where's the real advice? Where's mama? Go start a 529 for your kid right now. Put $50 a week and watch how it grows and pays for college. Mama, do you know that you're more likely to survive your spouse 9 times out of 10? So you better make sure that his shit is taken care of. And when he tells you, don't worry, you'll be taken care of, you better run real fast and make sure that the documents actually say your name. And by the way, did you know that I have clients whose father just passed away and they found out, oh, there were some other things going on. There might be a real stories.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you protecting yourself? And do you understand the basics? What's a will? What's a power of attorney? What's an IRA account? What does the life insurance policy do? Are you properly named on those things? The broker making a mistake and not putting you as a beneficiary or as a transfer on death could lead to $10,000 or more in probate court in a year of your time when you're in the greatest depths of despair. Where are the basics for women? They do not exist. So that's why I wrote Money Mama. It's a 2-hour read, even less. In and out, here are the highlights of what you need to know. And here are some crazy stories that clients have had happen to them that I don't want to happen to you.
I think that's a wonderful point. I think for women especially, I am a CPA, but I work in wealth management and financial planning. And I can't tell you how many clients I've seen who, male or female, frankly, just because finances stress them out so much, they don't even want to look at it. They don't want to look at the number. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to do the work. And so sometimes they hire someone like myself to help them out a little bit, but we still have to have the conversation of this. I'm not your whole guy. You are a steward of your finances, right? And I think it's a similar principle here. Living in fear of something, even if it's your finances, can leave you feeling out of control, can leave you feeling just afraid. And who wants to live like that? You might as well get your hands dirty and figure it out, right? That's kind of my perspective.
You know, and Rob, to your point, it is very scary to take a long, hard look at ourselves honestly.
Yeah.
And inventory, where the hell am I? But it's the necessary first step.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I could bang you on the head, learn, until you're ready and you show up. You know, whatever I say is irrelevant until you're ready to receive it.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think your point of it being the first step is so true, right? That honesty with yourself and just being willing to accept whatever shows up when you do that honest inventory is terrifying and can be very uncomfortable, but empowering. Because once you get through it, you're like, okay, a lot of times you're probably going to come out the other side and realize, okay, that wasn't that bad. Or you'll come out and go, okay, great. Now I know what to do. And you're no longer spinning your wheels.
It reminds me of that 8 Mile Eminem movie.
Love that movie. Love the music to that movie.
And yeah. He comes out and tells everybody everything about him. And says, go ahead, tell them something they don't know about me. Because when you take that kind of ownership over your shit, and we all have it, mm-hmm. No one can touch you.
It's true. It's almost like an invincibility, right?
What are they going
to There's say? Nothing to hide.
Right?
What are they this say? Is who I am. Okay, I'm going to jump a little bit in my question sequence here. And I'm going to jump to, you know, because we kind of already alluded to them a couple different times, your books. Let's talk about your books here, because you've got 4 books, but they're all different topics. Perhaps tell the listeners a little bit about what are your books, what was your impetus, and what was your impetus to write them?
The first book was The Millennial's Guide to the Universe, because after I graduated college in 2 years, completely debt-free, everyone was saying, you got to write a book about it. I need to know how to do it for my kids. No one freaking does it. But okay, there it is, your whole roadmap, how you can do law, school, your MBA, and undergrad completely for free in less than half the time. God bless anyone who wants to take me on that endeavor, you know, on that But if you do follow it, you get there. Realistically, no one wants to limit their time in college because before the pandemic, it was the most fun ever. And that's the real truth.
Everyone, it takes 6 years for a bachelor's degree because everyone's just having too much fun.
Well, they're hungover for three of them, right? So.
That too, yeah.
So, okay, that's the, and I really felt that this book had been waiting to be written. And then I spoke to two separate astrologists at separate times, and they both said, you got to get to Hawaii. So I said, you know what? The universe talks to you. The next day I booked my trip as a solo woman to Hawaii, wrote my book in a week there.
Wow.
Edited it down. I had a huge launch party. I got, you know, lots of press, lots of great people there. And, you know, Rob, in life, there are certain things you have to do before the next step can come. You have to own it. That book had been waiting to be written since I was really, you know, 19 or 20 years old and had done college that quickly and then law school and a full scholarship. And I was just ready to put this out in the world. As a result of that book, I was asked to speak at a Santa Monica thought leadership conference, where, by the way, because I happened to be there, because my husband had just come back from an international trip, we connected online. We had met at a Shabbat dinner 2 years before in New York City. And 3 months later, I'm engaged. And a few months after that, married. And thank God, now we have two beautiful daughters. So I feel that that book was my...
Man, that's quick.
You know, I don't mess around, as you know, Rob. I have a lot of work to do on this planet. So that happened. Then I became the mom. And then I'm like, oh my God, moms know nothing. All my mommy friends who I'm meeting know nothing about their money. They have no clue. Money Mama was born. Money Mama allowed me to get the press to be the TV commentator. And we were back in New York at this point. All of a sudden, we're pregnant with baby number two, Brielle. And I'm like, I'm not paying my New York apartment. Thank God. Who knew the pandemic was happening? Then, you know, I'm sitting here on the floor with my kids in Colorado, where I currently am. It's a Friday night, the week after Ruth Bader Ginsburg had passed away. So on the 25th of September, right? Or October, September. And a tribute book to her came to my mind. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. You got to get this out in the world. And so I did. In fact, I do have a copy of that book here, For I Am Ruth. And my favorite line in it is one that really has hit a lot of people. It's courage is not the absence of fear. It is doing it in spite of it, my dear. And a lot of grown adults need to hear that.
Yep.
This is really a book about a woman who did incredible things in the world and how we can all take that on as well. Then I said to my group of amazing LinkedIn lawyer ladies, I go, let's write a book together. I have multiple bestsellers. I know how to do it. And so we did. And then I, you know, all 20 of them now can say they're best-selling authors for the book Networked. And actually, Rob, I have another book coming out any day, which is called I Love When It's Mommy and Me, which is a children's book dedicated to all new moms. Because, people can't even fathom what it is to 1,000% of the time be responsible for another human being's life. And that human being cannot say, thank you, I love you. Not yet. Mm-hmm. So this book was the book I wish I could have read to my kids when I first became a mom, to remember that what we do for our kids and how much we give them and how, you know, it's that give and receive love.
Yeah.
So that's coming out soon. And, you know, who knows what's next? I mean, Rob, you want to write a book?
I've thought about it, I'll admit. Well, I mean, here's a question that I had as I was thinking about this. I'm like, how in the world do you kick out five books in the midst of running your own very successful law practice, being a mother of two children, and everything else, your podcast, your radio show, your TV appearances, all these things that you have going on, not to mention you're in the middle of a pandemic and all across the country and social media, all that stuff. how in the world do you find the time to be able to do that?
So,
is a question.
A lot of people think it's so much time. It's not that much time. The fact is that what's a lot of people don't ever get started. They don't have the roadmap of how to get there. I actually started a publishing company called Goldilocks Books, LOX, because of this exact thing. You're never going to do it because you're going to think it takes so much time, you're never going to be able to get it done. Here's a little secret. I can get anybody who's willing to put in the work from start to finish to have their book done and out on Amazon in a month flat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. 1 month flat. And that's your guarantee, huh?
Look, if they put in the work, you know?
Yeah, that's the key.
The fact is, what can you do in a month, Rob? 31 beautiful days of opportunity.
Yeah.
So, like, really, how long does it take to write? Let's say this is a 300-word book. 30 minutes to write the words?
Yeah.
Okay, the editing, this and that. The real part of a children's book is it's thinking about what are the images that you want, how do you coordinate them, and that kind of doing and redoing.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual words don't take very long.
You're totally right.
You know?
I think it is kind of harkens back to some of those original points that we were saying, right? This idea of using the most of your time, not wasting so much that's there already.
Rob, write a book literally about your practice in a matter of days. And here's how you do it. You write the top 10 things that everyone needs to know that you're an expert in. Headlines. You then write everything you can think about on each heading. Okay? And then you pick up your phone, you speak into it and to your voice recorder, or mm-hmm. you're really smart, you do it on Zoom, so now you have all this great video content too. You get it transcribed for 10 cents a minute on Scribd.com. You get it edited, you get a beautiful cover done, you know, you just wrote a book. And that book is a business card that no one throws out, a legitimacy advocate when you're not even speaking or there, a press getter, a credibility connoisseur. That's what your book does.
I love that. And it's funny you say that because it's when you say it like that, it sounds so easy.
It is.
Because it is, right? But I think more often than not, it's what we think, keyword there, what we think the time and the effort and the energy that it's going to require keeps us from ever getting started.
Ever. Like, why?
Considering how easy it could be.
Rob, why does it have to be 4 years? Seriously. You need 126 credits, okay? So if you divide that by four, let's say it's around 31, right? A mm-hmm. year. 31 credits is not hard to get a year because there are winter courses that run 9 days that will give you 7 credits for 2 courses during the winter when you're not doing shit anyway. And then there's AP credits that you can take in high school that can count for 31 of those
credits.
So you walk in and you can be done in 2 years, but no one thinks about it like that because college is 4 years. Or law school's expensive. Well, you know what? If you ace your LSAT, which means that you invest $1,200 into a great tutor, you now save $300,000 in tuition.
That sounds like a great ROI. I mean, from the investment space, I'd take that return any day.
Any day. So, you know what? And I really believe it's not the student's fault, okay? They're not told. Parents are just trying to do the best that they can for their kids. They've been told these lies. The fact is, if I was planning curriculum, there would only be adjunct professors who are actual practitioners. Why? Because you want to know that if you ace that class, that person's giving you a job or getting you a job.
Amen.
And if the professors cannot do that because they don't have their own network, which is why they've gone through 10 years of school to be a PhD and then profess at a school with no real world skills, why are they the ones telling me how I should live my life? Or even better, the academic advisor, what the hell are they advising? Sorry, I know I went off chant, but the fact is,
no, this honestly, you know, for any of my professors who might be listening to this back from school, I think you're making some great points. But I'll admit, I was fortunate. I graduated from a great program that had a lot of adjunct professors. And I'll admit, my favorite professors were the adjunct professors.
No doubt.
Because they had those things, right? That real life experience.
They had the stories. It wasn't theory. It was like, oh my God, when I was actually out in practice, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. Because this life is stranger than fiction. The stuff we hear from our clients, I mean, like, tell me if I'm wrong, Rob, but I hear the craziest shit that I would never even think, like, a, you know.
No, I'm right there with you. Right there with you.
So, you know, you use that as your canvas in the world, and you're actually able to connect to people. And, like, here's the thing. When I go and I speak about the client who had her ex-fiance before she even got married as the beneficiary of a life insurance account, and her daughter was left high and dry, that actually resonates with people.
Oh my gosh.
As opposed to go get a life insurance policy. Which one means more?
The story. Because we are, let's be real, we like to think that we're logical. We want to think that we're very logical creatures, that we're very Spock, right? But we're not. We're very Captain Kirk. We're all emotion. Right. And we follow our gut. And if your gut is just, there's no story. That's the story is what grabs people. It's what brings the heart into
and
it.
And what makes you remember in our social media world of 5 seconds here and 10 seconds there, people don't have the brain space to even consider what they're hearing. So it's only through that story that they actually connect. And, you know, it's funny, my husband just walked in and I think it's divinely situated because if you know about a book called The Goal, have you ever heard of that, Rob?
No, I haven't.
It's like required reading at Amazon at a certain level. And it teaches a very simple thing, the theory of constraints. You have to understand what the constraint is. Okay. And that's the thing that's going to slow up the process. So you have to understand that so that you can make the process go more efficiently. That's basically the whole concept of the book. But the 600-page book that has sold 30 million copies around the world. Because it tells the story. So
many good things. Man, okay, I honestly wish we had 2 hours to record here because there's just so much good stuff. We've been recording already for almost an hour. So to be cognizant of your time, I'm going to ask just hopefully two quick questions here and we'll end. And we're going to leave tons of resources and links for listeners here at the end and in the show notes so that people can get a hold of you, learn more about you, because I'm sure they're going to want to. One of the questions I want to end with asking you here is this idea of legacy. As I did a bunch of research on you and as I've paid attention to your stuff, you talk about this idea of legacy a lot. So what does it mean to you to leave a legacy? And what do you hope to leave as your legacy then when all is said and done?
To leave a legacy is to be the one who's able to define your life, in my opinion. I want to live and leave a legacy of love. And to me, that means lifting and uplifting others to live vivacious, victorious, and extraordinary lives. My legacy will go down in history as a world changer who made the future generations of women and children and thereby their families and thereby the world a more compassionate, able to show themselves, able to be themselves, fiscally understanding and responsible, abundant world.
Man, okay, I love that. There are so many ways in which we could unpack this. And ironically, as you were saying these things, talking about making an impact on women and children and therefore impacting the world and all these things, it's made me think about all the things that you already do to do that. Because as I was preparing for this, the follow-up question I was going to ask you is, what are you doing to make that future a reality? But it sounds like you're everything from your firm to your books to your social media presence seems to be pointing towards that legacy.
It's who you are, Rob. You know, there's no running from who you are. You can go anywhere in the world. You can get on any plane, but and we're constantly running from ourselves. Look in the mirror and understand, who am I and what do I care about? And do that thing. And, you know, and thank you for saying that. There is no surprise here. What you see is what you get. I care deeply about the subject matter. It has become my life's work, because a legacy is not about when you die. That's too late. It is a living legacy. It's not too late. You wake up in the morning, you have an opportunity to make change, to make it a better world. And people who are waiting, you know, that's the thing about sitting on the beach and looking at the horizon. The closer you get to it, the further it goes. You have to just go and live your life every single day. That's the legacy that I want to leave.
Amen. I don't think I need to add any more to that. I think that's wonderful. And I love it.
I think, Rob, in my next life, I'll come back as a preacher, or maybe later this life we'll see.
Hey, I say you could already do it right now, is what it sounds like. And your speaking engagements might just be the precursor to it. Let's be real. All right. Well, I would love to end with one question that I love asking everyone. And I think I'm really excited to hear what your response is going to be. And that question is, what does it mean to you to be a contender?
Being a contender means showing up with passion, integrity, and your whole self each and every day to be the shining light and example for future generations, so that they too have the confidence to know that I want my daughters to say, of course I'm going to be a CEO. My mom was a CEO, so duh, obviously I will be too. And when I say my daughters, I'm not just talking about my biological two delicious daughters. I'm talking about women and children of the world who are seeing us as role models of what is possible. Because the 4-minute mile was impossible, Rob, until the contender made it a reality.
Yep, exactly. It's always impossible until it's done. And then all of a sudden it seemed achievable to everybody.
So easy. Oh my God, so easy.
Of course. All right, Natalie. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed this. Like I said earlier, I wish we had more time to be able to talk more, because I'm just enjoying this. But Rob, we have to end. So before we end,
thank you so much for having me, and seriously, wonderful questions. Wonderful. Just, you're truly a wonderful host, and it's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Before we completely end, though, do you want to take a second and maybe tell listeners how they can find out more about you or what you do?
Look me up, people. I don't want to be like that douche, but Google me, Natalie Alicia Gold. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on all the social media channels. You can find me on my law firm, GoldbergLLP.com. You can find my books. Any way that I can touch you, make your life a little bit better, send me an email, hello@goldlegalgroup.com. Always willing to help anyone I can. And truthfully, I get no more satisfaction in life than knowing I made some kind of an impact. So if I can do that for any of the listeners, I'm game.
All right. Well, I'll leave links to all those things in the show notes so listeners can get a hold of you easier. Thank you again. And yeah, thank you.
Man, couldn't you feel Natalie's intensity the whole time? She just attacks life with everything. For me, as I was listening to the show, the real big takeaway was not only just this passion and intensity, but this idea of the living legacy that Natalie talks about, this legacy that she is creating in everything that she does. And, you know, as I was listening to that, it made me think, you know, what is my purpose? What is my passion? Why do I do what I do? And luckily, I've sat down and I've kind of figured those things out, but I'd like to throw those questions to you. Why do you do what you do? What is your passion? What makes you excited to get up and get moving in the morning? And if you haven't figured that out yet, that's okay. But we're right about the start of a new year, and it's that time of year when everyone sits down and starts writing some goals. Well, why don't you take some time to sit down and really figure that out? You know, in Proverbs 29:18, it says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." No vision means you don't have a plan. You don't know the answers to those questions. And so you're likely going to perish. Natalie calls it the living dead, right? I don't know about you, but I don't want a life where I'm the living dead. I want you to live a life of passion and joy and excitement. But that requires purpose. So go out there, make a plan, and create a life worth living. Make a living legacy. All right. Thank you for joining us today. If you haven't done so already, please remember to like, subscribe, and tell a friend about the show. As always, a list of the resources and links we discussed, as well as a recap of the show and more about our guest, can be found in the show notes. Please feel free to shoot me an email at rob@contenderswanted.com if you'd like to suggest a guest for the show or just to contact me. I'd love to hear from any of the listeners and hear any of the feedback you might have or maybe even how the show is helping you. So once again, my email is rob@contenderswanted.com. Thank you for listening, and remember, success leaves clues and contenders are always wanted.